Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cloud Conversations. I'm Peter Rising, one of your hosts, and I'm delighted to welcome you to this very special episode, not only because of our very special guest today, who Kat will introduce to you in a minute, but this is actually the 50th episode of Cloud Conversations. It's hard to believe that we're up to 50 already after wow. Being going so short a time, it feels like, but we've come a long way and we couldn't have done it all without you, our wonderful listeners and viewers. So thank you for your support. But I'm sure you will echo that, my very, very good friend and co-host for the day, Kat Greenan. How are you today, Kat?
I'm so good. I can't believe we're on 50 episodes.
I know.
I didn't know. Ah, happy 50th.
I know. The same age that I will be this year.
Ah, well, it's meant to be.
There you go.
Sorry, I think there's a bit of a delay on my side. So if I cut anybody out, there's just such a weird lag going on. But I have the absolute pleasure to introduce our guest for today's episode, 50th episode, which I don't even know about. It's a very special guest, Stanley Hansen, who is an amazing Microsoft MVP, CEO of Cloudway, author, blogger, international speaker. I mean, TikToker as well. The list goes on. I probably butchered that introduction, but Stanley, how are you doing? And would you mind giving a little bit of an introduction to who you are and let the audience know what you do?
Yes, thank you. So my name is Stanley Hansen. As you said, I'm a CEO at Cloudway. I'm a principal cloud architect at Cloudway as well. So I'm still hands-on, not just, but I am getting good at delegating though. So stay calm and delegate is my motto. I'm a Microsoft MVP, been that since 2011. So it's over 10 years now, and it's this lifestyle that I've been living for the past 10 years, being a blogger, speaker, as you said, an author. And I tried to do a bit of everything. As you said, I even tried TikTok. So that's the short version of me. And I started Cloudway actually in, I think it's over 5 years now. And we are now, right now, we are 11 people. We are focusing on Microsoft 365. And my main focus area is Microsoft Teams and productivity.
Amazing. So there's a lot in there to go through, if I'm honest, which is amazing. But can you go back a little bit and tell us a little bit about how you got into technology, what led up to your journey? You know, where did it all start?
Yeah, I think I've always been into technology. I think since the first LAN party we had back in the 90s, we were troubleshooting IRQ slots and address areas for the sound cards. We were trying to get those networks up and running. And I seemed to have the knack of not understanding everything, but sit there until it got it right. Which sometimes during LAN parties, you start in a Friday and end at a Sunday. And mid-Saturday, that's when we got it working. There's a lot of troubleshooting. So I think the troubleshooting, like gene, was something I had. So after the 90s, I educated as a bachelor in computer science. And right off the bat, I was right there when the dot-com bubble burst. So there were no jobs. Like, people laughed at me when I said, oh yeah, you want to work in IT? It's like you and everyone else, they said. And that was kind of tough. So I had to learn to sell myself, find my values the hard way. Because if you didn't understand who you were and why people should hire you and use your skills, then you didn't stand a chance, because there's so many people out there that wanted to do IT. So I ended up actually in sales in the beginning of the 2000s. So I worked with computer sales and mobile sales. So I actually sold the Nokia 3310, like the ultimate phone, you know, that when you drop it to the floor, it doesn't break. It just goes into pieces and you just build it together again. It's worked just fine. Nowadays, when you drop a phone, it's like dead, even though it costs like a lot of money. It's just like, oh yeah, you died now. Okay, that's fine. Back then, we dropped it everywhere. We used it to open the sodas and everything. And yeah, that was good times. So I worked in sales for like 3 or 4 years. And then I thought that was too easy, so I need to do some hard stuff. And so I went into engineering. So I did my MCSE, focused on exchange, and then one day someone sent me to a training for live communication server back then, which is then became Office Communication Server, which then became Skype for Business, or link in there between Skype for Business and now Teams. So I guess I stuck with that, the live thing. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, yeah. So it's so funny you mentioned the 3310. That was to show my age now. That was my phone, my first phone when I was younger.
Oh, yeah.
I really much enjoyed playing Snake on the old Nokia.
Snake 2.0, mind you.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. I think, I'm trying to remember what my first Nokia was. I think mine was a 5110 or something like that. I think I got my first ever mobile phone in 1995 or 6. And my friend said to me at the time, "What the hell are you doing with that thing?"
Yeah, you had a portable phone, right?
Yes.
It wasn't called mobile at that time. It was called portable.
Right, a portable phone. Yeah, that's right. They were huge at that time as well, weren't they? Some of the very first one I ever used was a Motorola. They were very, very popular in the sort of even early 90s. The company I worked for, a law firm, then had one or two of them, and I got to use them occasionally. And they were massive, and they were sort of flip phones. They were very early versions of those popular sort of Samsung-y flip phones that were all the rage before the whole BlackBerry, then iPhone, then smartphone thing took off. But this is awesome. This is a trip down memory lane, Stoller. I'm really starting to feel quite nostalgic hearing all this.
Yeah, but just think about the smartphone became mainstream in 2011. That's not long ago, right? It's just about 10 years. And before that, we went around with like phones that you called and texted with. That's what you did.
Yeah, the journey of it is incredible, isn't it? But looking back to the 90s as well, I think my experience sounds very similar to yours, in that I was very much a troubleshooter and finding my way around, learning by doing. Unfortunately, I had the displeasure of spending a lot of years fixing printers. I don't miss printers. I'm assuming you feel the same way about them.
I think no one likes printers, really. No.
No. We still got one in our house, and I wonder why. But
Yeah, it's actually been useful during these COVID times, because suddenly for travel, you need to print stuff again. Mm-hmm. And that's when we have been using a printer lately. But no one likes them, I think. I'm surprised every time it works, actually. Yeah,
for sure.
I've got a question. I guess maybe this is for both of you then, growing up or working in that kind of time with technology. What would you say is the biggest difference between tech then and tech now? Or do people still have to face the same challenges? Like, if you're going to set your IT estate up, is it still the same sort of challenges that people faced, just different types of technology that we're dealing with now? Or is it completely different? How has it changed over the years?
I would say it's exactly the same and totally different. Because it's
analogy.
The same. Yeah, it is the same, because it is still computers. At the core, it's the same type of technology. It's just like newer and faster, and we have more layers around it. But being a consultant working with Microsoft today versus like 10 to 20 years ago is a huge difference, because now things are just working for you. When you implement a new feature, you just tick the button or just like update the preview or you check, like, is it released in my tenant yet? Instead of back in the days, which is like a couple of years ago, I guess, we had to take everything down, update, have it fail, roll it back, and then try to update again. And then in the middle of the night, like 3 o'clock in the evening, you were scratching your head. It's like, what am I doing wrong? And then you start searching around the web and see if someone else has something, a similar issue, and then you find an answer like was written 10 years ago. Yeah, if you face this issue, you need to take that like registry setting or that like little thing, and then suddenly it went through and you were good just to implement like a new service pack or even just an update. So I think that's the biggest difference, but that's probably the biggest difference between cloud and data center, of course, because people are running data centers still. But I think that's the biggest difference regarding like being a consultant, at least in the Microsoft productivity space and Microsoft 365, where most of the technology now is in the cloud. But we do run into like complex hybrid environments. But still, I think it's easier to be a server admin today than it was like 10 to 15 years ago, because most of the wrapping around the software is still kind of automated, and you have, do have a lot of support online. Back in the days, like 15 years ago, people were distributing software over CDs, and you almost had to write a letter with your question and get some answers like weeks later, or feels like at least. But yeah, I think that's the biggest difference, really.
Yeah, I would say from my perspective, looking back from the very early years, the biggest change that I can recall was probably when the internet and email came in, because I was working a few years in IT before they were even a thing. And just building PCs for people in the organization I was working for, and they were using them to type out letters and word processing and not much more than that. But when the internet came in and we started getting email, and I think the first email system I remember working with was Novell GroupWise way back when, that was just incredible. So I think that was sort of the first revolution, wasn't it? Getting connected to the World Wide Web, that changed everything. And then a few years later, as you say, Stola, when mobile technology started advancing and we all had little computers in our hands and in our pockets, which we take for granted now. And that journey has really just continued to evolve, hasn't it, to the where we are today with artificial intelligence and all of the amazing stuff we have now. So it's really interesting to look back on that journey and how it's changed our lives and how we take it all for granted. But boy, where would we have been without this technology in recent times that we've been living in with the pandemic? Mm. It's really saved our bacon there, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the for me personally, it means less like off hour work, where you need to like work when the system can be taken down and all that. And it's more about understanding the technology and how it can be used rather than maybe not so fun times when you had to do some changes to the system and it didn't come up after. And then you wonder, when you reboot the server, did I shut down the server or did I reboot? Because it's taking a lot of time to get access again. And then you sit there and wonder, and 30 minutes later you get access again. It's like, yes, it worked.
I don't miss those times at all, Stella, and I can relate to that completely. I've been many times as a server admin in my career. After everyone's gone home after 5:30 and you can do what you want with the servers, please restart and please don't blue screen, and the way your heart would sink if it did blue screen, and the steps you would have to go through to troubleshoot that. As you say, it's far easier now. I mean, thankfully I'm long not being a server admin anymore. But I imagine now it's way easier with images and VMs and that sort of thing, which is not something I ever really got that far with, because going back to a point you made about early in your career, how there wasn't many things you can do in IT, even within only Microsoft now, Microsoft 365, there are so many different specialities that people can look to for their career. Security and compliance, Viva, collaboration, there's so many things you can do. So absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Absolutely, I agree.
I think as well, when it comes to the technologies move so fast, but it has created a new set of challenges, really. Mm. So I do lots of workshops around Viva, and we always kind of talk about how the technology that we're using now is so advanced. It's to save us time, but it's to make us as productive as possible and work as much as we possibly can and get as much done as we can. You know, we're always on, we're always connected, and it's just, I think that has a whole set of great, that's wonderful, but at the same time, we're human beings and we're not robots ourselves, and we do need to take a break and switch off. So that leads me, what a great segue, this leads me right on to my next question, which I want to talk about, which is your content that you're creating now, the digital well-being content, which is available on your YouTube channel. I'll put the link below if you haven't seen the YouTube channel, guys. It's amazing because there's lots of stuff on there about Microsoft Teams, digital wellbeing. There's a whole series on that. And you're on TikTok as well with the digital wellbeing videos. And that's a really current topic, talking about burnout and things that you can do and tips and tricks to just make life a little bit easier so you can take those breaks and take that kind of step back. Can you talk a little bit about how that started? Why did you start the digital wellbeing content and kind of what is it all about? That would be good to know.
Yeah, so it started because I'm lazy, really. That's like
as
how everything starts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm lazy because what I hate is know about information, knowing about stuff I should have done, maybe could have done, and all that, but I don't do it because I don't find the time, I forgot about it, or I spend too much time finding information again. So back in 2008, I started blogging, and the reason I started blogging was to outsource my memory, because it turns out I don't have good memory. So let's outsource that. So I didn't want to relearn what I already have learned. So that's why I tried to blog everything down. And it wasn't that fun, really, to do it internally in the company I worked at that time. So I started to do it publicly. First off, it was just more like reference to other blogs, other sites, how like to find stuff again so I can collect it in the same place. But in time, I also started to create original content. So when you spend a lot of time troubleshooting something or in the moment you're understanding something, the moment of like full insight, because you understand the problem, you solve the problem, you know exactly what you did. But the point is like a couple of hours later, maybe a day later, maybe a week later, you're starting to forget again what you actually did. Why was it a problem? What did you do to solve it? So I started to then to put together, like I used this, I looked at this and this and this source and so on and so forth. So the next time I had the same or a similar issue, I could jumpstart the process by going through exactly what I did last time to either find the and solve the issue or rule out that this is not the same issue, this is something else. So that kind of thinking like irritates me if I'm spending too much time on that. So that's brings me over to like being structured. And I recently read the book called Grit by Angela. I'm going to slaughter her name though, but I think it's a Dutchner. Probably not that, so quite close. But by Angela at least. Okay. And she talks about intentional learning, which I find like when she put it like that, if you do intentional learning, that has so much more value than just being around, right? So there's a difference between being an intentional learner for a few years than having 10 years of just being around, never taking notes, never like trying to improve yourself, but you do your job, you understand what you're doing and you understand what's going on, but you're still struggling at the same pace in the same place. Rather than intentional learning is all about identifying your weakness and then working on that weakness and then improving, always being improving on your identified weaknesses and make sure that you are actually intentionally learning something new or noting down what you have forgot someday because you had an issue and you figured it out and then you didn't take note of it. So I had it again. This time I'm actually going to take note of it and save it either in my personal notes or blog. So I think intentional learning and intentional task management, time management, and thinking about like I'm going to not trying to redo what I always done. I'm going to do new stuff all the time, and that's where digital well-being comes into place. Because I've been reading into productivity methodologies for a long time. I subscribe to many of them. The getting things done methodology, the Pomodoro technique. I've been involved with the Take Back Your Life, how to do that in Outlook. And there are so many productivity methodologies. But when you're starting to read up on many of them and read some books, read some blogs, watch some TED Talks and so on, they're actually talking about the same things just in different ways, and people have found this and this way to work. And what they typically talk about is that you need to be intentional, you need to reserve time, you need to plan, and you need to like write things down, create your lists and so on. But all of them, they talk about how to do it like with pen and paper, or you can use a digital tool. That's how far they take you. Not saying like because they want to be agnostic, they like don't say not saying which digital tool they want you to use, or you can use whatever works for you, and that's fine though. But I've been looking into how to be productive, working smart, and being intentional in the context of Microsoft technologies for the past 10 years, because I've been very interested in that. And again, I want to work intentional. So I think 5 years ago, a video was recorded where I talked about OneNote life hacks, how you can run your whole life in OneNote. And it has like over 100,000 views. Right now it's 130,000 views. Actually, it was published by Microsoft a year earlier where it got 200,000 views. So I think I struck a nerve in that topic, which talks about how to be intentional and use digital tool and how to specifically use Microsoft tools to work smart in your work life. So recently, actually in February 2022, the penny dropped for me, actually, when I started to see and Microsoft were coming so far with Microsoft 365 and Viva that now I can talk about what we call digital well-being. Because Microsoft now talks about employee well-being, what that means, and that it means that people need to make sure they take care of themselves. You need empathic leaders in order to help people help themselves, and so on and so forth. But still, there is something missing. What's missing is that how are you going to use the tools in order to work smarter in Microsoft 365? So that's what I call digital well-being. So that you know why you should use Microsoft to for your personal notes, when to use Planner, when to use OneNote, how to process those signals that you capture, and how to reserve time during a workday, a super busy workday, to actually focus so much that you reach the flow state, deep work, and so on. But that only takes you so far as what you can do as an individual. So we also need to look at the team's culture and how you work as a team with your closest colleagues and how the organization works with teams. Because it doesn't matter how good you are at managing your time if you are in back-to-back meetings all the time, right? Because the meeting culture has like been skewed because of COVID, but it's always been skewed, really, because people were always just meeting and having meetings about meeting. And then a long time went by and they had meetings about the meeting they had previously for the meeting. And they need to have the prep meeting for the next meeting they're going to have. So it's so many useless meetings that we're having. And that's where we talk about teams culture, how you collaborate in chats, channels, and meetings. And that is the basis, again, for tuning your notifications. So your notifications is like the final step, where if you manage to tune your notifications, you get better at getting the correct information at the correct time, so that you get better at working when you're working and not working when you're not working. And I'm guessing that as MVPs, we have our vocation, right? We have found like our passion where we would do what we do for work, maybe for free, and we do stuff for free as MVPs. We help people understand the Microsoft technology, but then we will have trouble disconnecting from work. Yeah. It starts to blur together, and we need to be very intentional about working and not working. And then if you get a work notification in the middle of the evening where you're actually trying to recharge, that instantly brings you back into work mode or even blogging mode or MVP mode, where it may take you like 30 to 1 hour to get out of that mode again. So having the proper set of notifications based on the team's culture and based on you being intentional, that is where the digital well-being comes into play, because you are mastering the digital technology that we are using every day to work for you and not against you.
Oh, amazing. Absolutely agree with all that. One thing that is particularly interesting to me, Stella, in regards to the modern work environment that we all now work in, is the global nature of it. The fact that many of us have colleagues in different countries. Certainly, I know you do at Cloud, where you have people in all sorts of different countries around the world. And one feature that came out in Teams not that long ago was the seeing what time zone the other individuals are in. Have you found that little things like that have made a difference to how you work with maybe international colleagues, for example?
Yeah, and Teams also let you know that what both in Outlook and in Teams, you see what kind of time zone they are in. And it's very good for planning meetings, because sometimes like the live calculation of time zones can be difficult. but also, I think that is a solution for people who aren't, doesn't have the proper culture within the organization. Because if you have the proper culture within the organization for how you are reaching out to people and how people are intentionally disconnecting, then I should be able to send you a message whenever I want. Because I don't know when you are working. I don't know if you're working 5 in the morning or 10 in the evening. I have no idea. I don't know how you organize your life. So for me to like, yes, I know it's off hours for you, but I'm going to send you this message anyway, because it's not off hours for me, or I'm doing this right now. If I'm going to postpone this for tomorrow, then I'm not doing you a favor, because I'm going to send you a message when you are super busy, instead of if you only gotten it before that, you actually could have executed on it maybe. I don't know that, right? Because maybe you had to get up early that morning, or you want to get a head start on the day. I don't know. So then notifications are so much more important.
Yeah.
Right. So if the culture within the organization, everyone knows that I can send you a message whenever, I won't disturb you. Because you, if you got disturbed, you only disturbed yourself, because you went into Teams and had a look, or you went into Outlook and had a look. But I won't like drag you into that work mode, because you and everyone knows in the organization that, yeah, I won't be expecting an answer right now, but I wanted to get it out there so that I can move forward with my tasks.
Hmm. I get that, actually. I completely relate to that, because I am somebody who wants to get what I need to get done, and then I can move on, and then it's out there, as you say. I think one of the other challenges that I found with some of the newer technology that we've got now is the behavior that you yourself adopt in terms of using it, and you've already hinted at this. I am a holy terror for putting in focus time, and then people will just try and book over it, and I'll say, oh, okay, then I'll just do this one because it's important. And then it just sort of cascades, and then and getting into habits, like I was talking to Kevin McDonald about this last week, about Viva, not Insights, the virtual commute, something that's very, very good for your well-being, sort of finishing up your day before you switch off for the day. I got into the habit of doing that for quite some time, and it was great. It was very, very useful. It gave me an idea of, right, this is what I've done today, this is what's coming up in the diary tomorrow, this is what I have to expect, I'm switching off now. But slowly but surely, I just got out of the habit of doing that. I'll probably switch off this evening, and it's beyond that time now. It's been and gone, and I haven't done it because I've thought, I've got other things I could be doing here. I could be getting ready for this podcast, or I could be going into the house and getting something to eat. So it's maintaining those habits is a challenge, and everyone works different, don't they? And you've got to find what works best for you. That's the difficulty.
Yeah, it's stuff like that with what Microsoft is doing with Microsoft Viva as a whole, but Viva Insights specifically, and for you as an individual, bringing into focus time and virtual commute. It actually blows my mind, because it makes it mainstream to work smart in Microsoft 365, and the platform has tools to help you do it. And that's the biggest change since like from now and historically whenever, because we never had this kind of insights into our workday before. We never had been encouraged to work this smart before. It's always been about making a technology available and for you to be able to send emails and chat to people and all that, and then good luck. Now it's about, hey, did you remember to disconnect? Do you know how many quiet days and quiet evenings you've had the past month? Like, do you want to do a virtual commute? And virtual commute, as you said, is about reflecting over your day and planning the next day. And that is exactly what the productivity books are talking about. And it even asks you to meditate. It's like, for me, it's like, whoa, meditate. Now you went too far. But almost all the productivity books talk about, hey, yeah, if you want to be like structured and declutter your head, you should meditate. It's actually a thing. And people are like, what? And then, but I do think they pull it too far though, because like 10 minutes before I'm going to pick up in the kindergarten, that's not going to happen. I'm super stressed already. But 30-second breathing exercise, absolutely, I can do that. And it's so important, those small things. So having a technology platform that is starting to make mainstream how to work smart, the singularity is near, people.
I think as well, with especially something like Viva Insights, it's so hard to switch off. And as MVPs as well, going back to your point of working of always on, it's hard to separate the work. And you don't realize how much time it does actually take for you to get back into things. So it's quite funny, when I show the virtual commute to customers, I always get a mixed view. I think there's different demographics in the room usually, where I'll talk about meditation and everyone's like, what?
What's happening in your head
exactly.
Now? Where did the new age come from?
Yeah, exactly. And people are so shocked that, you know, there's tools out there for well-being. They like the kind of view of, oh, I don't deserve to take a break to meditate. Like, I don't want to spend 10 minutes out not working. That's the kind of old view that we have. But now moving into this well-being employee experience, I think, is just there for everyone's health. But even the manager's view as well. So, you know, there's people who are managing a group of people and they're not in the same room as them. So how do you know if they're working till 10 o'clock at night? How do you know if they're stressed and crying at their desk? You know, there's not really, if you're not in the same room as them, there's not really a way to do that. And then the insights gives you an insight into your own habits as a manager. Are you booking too many meetings? Are they long? Are they not required? Are you contacting your team out of hours too often? Are you the reason they're not having any quiet hours? As well as the view of what's your team, you know, what are their habits like? Are they working too late? Are they not collaborating? Or, you know, is there anything that we can do to improve it? So it's a really, really exciting time. And that's just one aspect of it, Viva Insights and, you know, those kind of three levels. But there's other aspects to it to help with learning and development, to help with communication and culture. And it's just, yeah, I get really excited talking about Viva.
Absolutely. And my biggest learning on these kind of like well-being activities is that an employee can only go so far. You can optimize your task management, you can optimize some of your calendar, but it's the manager that can really make and break it for you and create a new culture. So within Cloudway, we are all MVPs at Cloudway, and you would think that people were super good at managing their time and like disconnecting, and we are the worst. Like, people were like, we need to start from scratch, and when technologists like us actually need to be taught how to use the technology. Think about like normal people then who aren't that passionate or just want to do their job. They're definitely not thinking about this, how to make sure they are disconnected in the evenings and so on. So the moment we talked about it internally and it became like everyone became aware of it, and I told them, hey, you need to reserve quiet hours in the evening because I'm going to send you messages. I don't want you to respond to them unless you want to. Because the thing is, when you get a work message in the evening, and you have a pop-up on your phone. You see it, you glance at it, you saw that the word, you maybe saw a couple of words only. The thing is that in our minds, there is a timer that starts going off right away. Like, I need to answer this within 30 minutes. This is happening. I need to drop everything I'm doing. Like, I'm at the kids' practice. I'm going to go away and answer this message right now because it's in my mind. I need to answer it. But if you didn't see that message and you answer it the day after, it will be okay, right? But it makes such a big difference. So that quiet hours and that it can be led on by the manager, because Viva Insights can do that, that the manager can actually implement quiet hours in Teams for their team members. Then it becomes, oh yeah, this is what we do in our team or maybe at our company, so that the culture may actually change. And it's not an individual thing because you can't do this alone. And then you, I think what's very interesting is that Viva Insights started talking about no meetings Friday. And we actually implemented that in Cloudway in August 2021. And we always had this, but we haven't deployed it, if you understand the difference. So people could always do it, but no one did it because it wasn't the culture to do it. But when I told them, like, now from now on, Fridays are no meeting Fridays. You are free to declutter your mind, learn something new, write blog posts, do some brain dumps, and do whatever you need to do to get your head closer to the water. And that instantly, overnight, changed the whole culture within the company, just because people were told that it was okay. They didn't have to take it, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's so interesting as well, when you, the aspect of focus time and no meeting Fridays, and you can kind of say, okay, well, you know, we'll have a no meeting or we'll do some focus time. It starts at that core root of the culture of transforming that so people will actually do it. And I don't think people would realize how much of an impact that would have on the rest of your week. And actually, probably you get a lot more done in your Monday to Thursday because you have that time to reset. So I struggled with time management for a long time. And especially when I started doing community work, I found that I really was struggling to, I was saying yes to everything. I just felt there was no coordination. There was no structure to anything. And I was, you know, so was that a dog or just
on the yes, I saw that too.
or a little kid's hair or bubble. I don't know. I couldn't see. don't get me onto dogs. Anyway, so yeah, but
just a cat.
It took me. Oh, it's a cat. Oh, and I'm only joking. I like cats as well. So it did take me, I would say maybe, you know, 12 months at least for me to finally get into a rhythm where I was happy with the amount of time I shut off. Because even when I was sitting with my partner and I scroll on my phone, I'm on blogs or I'm on Twitter looking at, you know, and it's not switching off. You're still in that thing of, you know, where you're still on trying to learn things and it just is not sustainable. So having this, I think, to give you those suggestions of, you know, booking the time and having that in a work culture just makes life a lot easier and the work you do actually a little bit better as well.
The personalities and... go ahead, sorry, Stella.
No, go ahead, Peter.
I was just gonna add that one of our other co-hosts, Rue, who I was talking to not so long ago, he often says to me that he rarely goes more than about 20 minutes of any day at any time without something Microsoft 365 popping into his head. And I think that is just the way we are, what we do, the sort of personalities we have as people who work with this tool set and love it and are passionate about it the way we are, that we do this in our spare time as well voluntarily, and we've become MVPs and part of this community. It gets so addictive. I totally relate to that. I find it hard to switch off completely. It's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, and I think that brings us back to initially we mentioned that the smartphone is like only 10 years old, kind of mainstream. I've been using a smartphone for 15 years, but back then it was called Windows mobile, I think, and you had to spend a week getting it set up and everything. It's like
I had one of
finally
those.
Set it up, and like what takes like a day now took like weeks back then. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to say is that it's only 10 years, and it's just now it becomes a tool for work, which means that we are still figuring this out.
Yeah.
And what I see is that people are not conscious about notifications. I recently wrote a blog post on that on Tech Community, but that it's the number one skill you should master for the next decade to take control over notifications. And turn off those who are not interesting for you. Make sure you get the valuable information there, but get it at the right time. So valuable information is Teams, but not in the evening or not when I'm doing something else, not in the weekends, for instance. Then it's not valuable for me. But on Monday, boom, super interesting. I need it. And or I can go in on my own time, but then it's my intention of going in there. So, okay, I'm reserving 30 minutes to go in there, have a look and so on. But then it works with where I'm at and so on. So this is why we need to rethink this and be conscious about this, because too many people are unconscious. I had a look on my phone recently, actually, and I've been working with turning off notifications for years. And I still have almost 200 notifications on my phone over 24 hours. It were some apps there that actually over-communicated. So I went in there and turned off the notifications for them, and I reduced it with 150 notifications. With a couple of clicks. But people are like, no, I'm just dismissing it. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. But it does. It bothers your subconsciousness. And it's we're actually being conditioned to check the phone all the time and so on. So we need to break those habits, and that's super hard.
Yeah. It is so hard, isn't it? But it is so good for your well-being, because an example that I had the other day was, I'll get up in the morning. I get up most days about 6 a.m. And on a weekday, I have a couple of hours before I have to take my oldest son to school. And I'll sit there and I'll look at a device of some sort by habit. I'll put my headphones on, maybe watch some YouTube as I get into the day. And my wife's across the room doing exactly the same. And one day, a few days ago, my headset went out and I had to recharge it. And I just sat there and was charging my phone as well. I can't do anything now, really. But I actually felt better. I actually talked to my wife for half an hour, and it actually lifted my mood so much and cheered me up, because I was actually sitting there thinking, oh, I've got this to do today, I've got that to do today, and you sort of get yourself into a, bury myself in this YouTube video and not think about it. I'll just put it off. But talking about it, talking to those nearest and dearest around you actually is a great thing, and it just made me feel so much better. So I'm going to try and do that more often, have more time away from the devices. I think turning off notifications is a great thing to do as well. I'm going to look into that even more than I've already started to do, because one application I have already started doing it on is LinkedIn, because I got so fed up with LinkedIn. It's almost become like a junk mail for me. I don't know how it is for the two of you, but the number of requests I get on there now for can you nominate me for MVP or sales emails, I see you are in charge of this at your company and you will want to work with us, it's more that than anything now. So I just had enough of LinkedIn, so I'm going on LinkedIn very rarely now. Twitter is really my go-to for social media and sharing.
I think that's also part of digital well-being, because I see too many people leave those platforms because they become too much junk. But I do believe that you can tune it so it becomes valuable for you again. And because you can unfollow people, don't have to disconnect, you can unfollow. So a couple of years ago, I went through my LinkedIn, unfollowed half the number of people that I'm connected with, because they moved on to other businesses, they moved on to and doing something completely else, or they are in a total different market than what's interesting for me. I'm still connected with them, but I don't see them in my timeline. So cleaning up your timeline, you can do that on Facebook, you can do it on Twitter even. You can, and I talk about this in my YouTube videos, actually. I think I talk about it for 1 hour, how to tune your social media platforms. So important to do that, because instead of leaving it, you can actually go and make it valuable for you.
Awesome. We're learning a lot here, Kat, aren't we? We're going to have to go and put this into practice. And I think
Stoll, I was going to say,
change our lives here.
Yeah. If we've taken away one thing from this podcast session, it is get those notifications tuned. I like that word as well. Yeah. I don't actually have.
Don't turn off tuned. Yeah.
Yeah. Tune them. But I, interestingly, so with social media, I tend to turn those notifications off. So LinkedIn, Twitter, even my dear TikTok that I'm obsessed with, I do turn all the notifications off just because it gets way too much. So I'll check them at maybe the end of the day. And sometimes I even leave it 2 days or 3 days before I even go in, you know, and check all the messages.
I don't believe you, though.
Well,
not for TikTok.
Maybe not for TikTok. No, I will do a daily TikTok. But yeah, and sometimes because of social media as well. So there's two kind of points here. So there's one, which is where you get a work email or a message that comes through of something you have to action. You know, it could be that comes through on the Friday and you'll do it on the Monday. And the idea of, even if you see the message and even if you don't respond to it in the next 30 minutes, I'm going to be thinking about that and like, oh, I'm going to have to sort that out Monday. And that's what I'm going to be thinking about for my entire weekend.
Yes.
Yeah. And you just seeing it and it just ruins it. So I've done my best to try and, you know, tweak those notifications coming through. But even I started getting on TikTok, when people comment, the better your video does, the more hate comments you tend to get, the more nasty people come on. And there's videos that I've done, they're not gone viral, but they've just had thousands of views rather than hundreds of views. That's the level that I'm at on TikTok. Not great, but. And when I saw the notifications coming through and it was a comment, my heart would sink and I'm like, oh, what's this person going to say something horrible to me? Or, you know, because it just, that's what happens. So some of them are quite funny, but it was that, you know, it bring me down, and I found my mental health was being really affected by it because I had that dread and anxiety of, oh God, there's a comment, right, I'm gonna have to look at it, and then look at it, and if it's something fine, then great. If not, you're like, oh no, and it just really upsets you and affects you. So the notifications, although it seems like, oh, I don't want to bother with that, that can honestly change your whole mindset towards well-being outside of work as well as inside of work. And I'm all for TikTok, but sometimes there can be some right, you know, not very nice people on there. So, but we've gone right into it with digital well-being. I did want to mention before we kind of move off the topic, we were talking about Viva there, Viva Insights. And as a fellow Viva Explorer, we have a group of MVPs who are involved in what we call the Viva Explorers. And we have our own characters, which is quite nice. But we do lots and lots of community work around Viva. But would you mind just explaining a little bit, because you were more involved in forming the kind of why and some of that nice stuff. Anyway, what it is, what it's all about, you know, since we're talking about Viva.
Yeah, so we are a group that calls ourselves the Viva Explorers. And it started with Leslie and Sarah, who are MVPs, talking about Viva, and then turns out there's a lot of us talking about Viva, especially we are now in the evangelizing stage. I would say we need to talk about what it is and why it's interesting for you. So there are multiple people that talks about Viva, but from completely different angles. Some of us are techies, so we talk about the analytics, we talk about how to set it up. Some of us are focusing on end users and end user training, adoption. Some are very focused on the big thinking and like where is Viva heading and where is it taking us? What's coming in the platform in the future? Myself, I'm very. I call myself the Viva empath. As a leader, being an empathic leader, I think that's a modern way of doing leadership. Is that you, not necessarily are an empath by nature, but your leadership style is empathic, which means that you understand that not everyone can do everything as easy as you can. So you need to spend some time making sure people are on the same page. And I think from in terms of Viva is using Viva, learning, teaching them how to use Viva Insights, digital well-being, absolutely. And for an organization as well to look at the insights in order to give something back to the organization, change the culture over time, for instance. So we all identify with different roles. I don't remember your role, Kat. What's your Viva role?
Viva cheerleader.
Cheerleader. Yay. Yeah, so we all have all our different angles, and that's what we understood. So I think we are like 11, 15 people right now. Which all identify with Viva as a technology and can talk about it. So the way the community can use us is we can give user group talks, we can talk at conferences about this, we can explain what it is, you can ask us questions, and then you will get some good answers. I think we have a Twitter group as well on our Twitter community. It's called About Viva, mostly consultants there right now. So if you are early in your organization focusing on Viva, then you should get in there because there's so much great insight into this. So I think we are still settling what we are. Are we a movement? Are we a group? Are we a community? What are we? But at least we are the body of evangelizing what you can do with Viva, how to get started, and understand how to implement it in your company.
Oh, this sounds cool. Do you have any character avatars for your personas?
We do. Yes, we do. So I have actually, I have it back there, but you see that spinning thing over there? That's a Pomodoro timer. Because I think time management is my thing. So I'm like the Viva empath with the Pomodoro timer. And then my colleague, Merete Stave, who's also an MVP, she is very good at drawing and illustrating. So she made an avatar for all of us.
That's amazing.
Oh, nice.
And you can follow the hashtag Viva Explorers as well on Twitter and on LinkedIn, and you'll see things that we're doing, posts. You know, if any of the Viva Explorers are speaking at events, you know, or anything like that, then if you follow that hashtag, you'll see what we're up to. But yeah, follow along. Absolutely. And learn more about Viva.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I see it all over Twitter. Kevin McDonald's one of the members as well, isn't he? And
yep.
It's yeah. And Leslie, as you say, you've got a great group of people involved in that. So it's lovely to see. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and just empathize. If you are from HR and interested in Viva, we have someone that comes with from that same angle. If you're techie and want to look at Viva, we have someone that interested in that. If you are a leader, a manager, and interested in Viva, we have something for that. So it's all those different like angles you can attack Viva because it's such a huge topic.
Absolutely. One thing that I do want to talk about a little bit is your involvement in the Office 365 for IT Pros publication, which has been around for a good few years now. There's an amazing team of people who've been working on that book, and you've been involved in a number of editions, I believe. And can you tell us a little bit about the book itself and your particular role in it and how everyone comes together and works to provide that to the community?
Yeah, that's a crazy project because it's a book about Microsoft 365 and especially the Office 365 components of Microsoft 365, the productivity suite. And it keeps updates every month. So we update the book every month. Even when it's New Year's, you need to update the book. Even when it's summer vacation, you need to update the book. And you need to do it on a monthly basis because that's how quick the things in the cloud changes. You get your own experience, which changes the way you look at technology. You understand it better. Microsoft is changing from compliance to purview, for instance. You need to change the book, right, to make it relevant. Yeah. Or you need to look at the difference between a Microsoft 365 group, a security group, a mail distribution list, and so on and so forth. So this book, Office 365 for IT Pros, is led by MVP Tony Redmond. And so he's the main author and the publisher, and he brings everything together, makes it cohesive. So we update it every month, and then every year we do a refresh. So the book is up for a refresh now in July, where we take stuff out that maybe gotten old, put some new stuff in, try to trim the book, because now I think it's 1,200 pages or something. It's and it's growing, so we need to always try to keep it down. But we are MVPs. I think we are 9 MVPs that are writing different chapters. Some are writing a lot of chapters. I, for instance, write a chapter on Teams calling and meetings. And for me, it's that intentional learning again, for staying up to date on the technology I've been working with for 15 years. So to interpret what's happening with Microsoft, what they're doing, and adding that as what you need to know as a generalist, Office 365 generalist, to understand what's happening with Teams calling and devices. So I've been doing that for past 4 years, actually. And the reason I am on the book is that I bought the book 4 years ago, and I worked with Sky for Business. It was all about Sky for Business back then, and the book were 1,200 pages then as well. But there were 5 pages on Sky for Business. It was like, well, this is a much bigger topic than you have. How can I join and help? So I asked, and they said yes, and I've been doing it ever since.
Amazing. And I do like the way that you've all got very clearly defined roles on it. And as you say, some people will do more chapters than others, but it sounds very consistent on that basis. And I believe also there is a dedicated editor on the book as well, isn't there? Is that Vasil, who is the editor of it?
Yeah, he's a technical editor, and I think he primarily does his work for each refresh. He has to read through everything.
That's a tough job.
Yeah, that's a tough job. How can you stay sane and read through everything? And multiple times, actually. I'm almost going insane reading my own stuff. So, but he reads and makes sure his knowledge is incredible, and he knows so much about everything. And then we have Tony, who is the editor throughout the year, who makes sure that that challenges us if something seems off, or maybe he helps me at least write better English. So sometimes he make me look good, which I appreciate. And yeah, he has to go through and make sure the book is coherent and all that. So and of course, chasing those procrastinators of MVPs to make the updates in time.
Yeah, because it's a lot of time commitment, isn't it? Especially every month when people have got their day jobs to do as well. More power to you all. It's an amazing, amazing achievement. And I know that many around our community, I certainly have the book, and many other people benefit from it. And the similar publication out there for M365 Security for IT Pros as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Which is... Thijs Lecomte is working on that one, isn't he? And
And Michael van Horenbeek is the lead author. Yeah,
I couldn't get his name there for 1 second, but thank you.
And these books are important, even though so I use the book myself in order to read about stuff I don't know or I'm not that familiar with. So I need to go like outside my comfort zone, I read up what the book says. And then I make up my own opinion and may like, okay, now I have a rudimentary understanding of this and how it's all connected. Now I can stand on those shoulders and like look at the details.
Exactly. No, it's so true. And that's one of the beauties of this community as well. I mean, I do recall, must be about a year or so back now, I think I consulted with you about an article that you'd written on Practical 365 about something in Skype for Business or Teams, can't remember what it was now. And
yeah, it was moving from Skype for Business Online to Teams and the shutdown.
That's right. I asked you a question about that, and you steered me correctly. And that's what's so great about our community. There's always somebody who you can go to, who you know you can trust, who will steer you correct. And there's no egos or anything like that. We're all one big community, and it's just so good. But absolutely fantastic. Well, one thing I've just remembered, I did want to ask you earlier on, actually, when you were talking about your blog, I imagine this has happened to you because it certainly happened to me. Do you ever Google something and find yourself at your own blog post on the subject?
Yeah. More than you would think. I was like, and I have no recollection of this.
I know.
Writing this. But there it is. And even more fun, though, if you're troubleshooting a topic and the customer or the one you're working with Googles and finds your article and say, hey, I have the solution here. Yes, I know about that. I wrote it. This is something else.
Yeah, it's quite a moment. Quite a moment. Have you ever
had a customer send me a link to one of Rue's blogs where we're talking about conditional access. And he was like, oh yeah, I've been reading this, and I was like, well, I'll have you know, I know who that is. But yeah, so I've had that before, but
So I've been helping some customers lately with some Skype for Business server stuff. So I need to go back in my own blog and search in my own blog in order to relearn what I knew back then. Because, recently we used an article that I wrote in 2011. Still valid because it's the same type of technology. But I don't have to remember it now, and I don't have to look into my notes or something like that, or write it off as lost knowledge. It's still there. So that's also part of like that intentional learning.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting, because I find myself to my version, I would say, of intentional learning is I have to fully understand the topic. So sometimes I'll read something and be like, okay, but not really take it in because I have to break it down into real layman's terms for me. So how would I explain this to someone who doesn't know anything about the technology? That's how I, would take in information. But yeah, I do tend to live in my OneNote as well. If my OneNote was to disappear for whatever reason, I don't think I'd still have a job. So so much.
Yeah, but that's what's so great with creating those TikTok videos, right? Because you are actually explaining it to someone else, and that's actually called the Feynman technique.
Yeah, it helps.
Yeah, and the Feynman technique is about you want to understand something, you read up about it, but you want to measure how you understand it, try to explain it to someone else, and then try to explain it to someone else that always asks why. And then if you find that you're struggling explaining it, you don't know it well enough, so you go back and read up on it. And then you try to explain it again. And that's called the Feynman technique. And I subscribe to that. And that's why I'm also a public speaker, is because always when I have learned something new, I do like to talk about it. But I also want to challenge myself in trying to explain it in such a way that people understand it better and put it in context of what's already there. So that's also a learning technique. For learning it better, because if you had a talk about something or made a video about something, you learned it in a totally different way and will stick with you longer. At the same time, you have the content you created when you had that moment of insight, right?
Well, I completely agree, and you learn by doing.
Definitely.
And
it definitely helped me.
Oh, sorry, Kat.
Go on. Sorry, there's a lag. There's a big lag. Sorry.
We've got away with it for most of the video, but you did that. You did have a massive lag there. Excuse me. Sorry. I was just going to say that I had a similar thing recently. I did a couple of videos for this channel actually on what we used to call Advanced eDiscovery, what we must now refer to as eDiscovery Premium, because Microsoft do like to rename things on a regular basis. And as I was putting together research for doing the videos and making sure I was up to date, you learn by doing, and I was learning new things as I was producing the video and sort of adjusting on the fly. I think, wow, I didn't know I could do that. So you've got to be on your toes. There's always something new to learn, no matter how long you've been working with these technologies. Microsoft force you to adapt and continually learn, and it's challenging, but it's I think it's good challenging, though. It keeps the old gray matter operating at peak performance, hopefully. What were you going to say, Kat? Sorry, over to you.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say it definitely helps me in terms of learning that way. And yeah, writing a blog about something, doing a video on it, even just looking on TikTok, it just I can get it, I can understand it, I know what I need to know about it. So yeah, it definitely helps. Just wanted to, before we kind of finish the part, this is so difficult to do when there's a lag, because I know people paused for like 30 seconds before I speak. So annoying. But I did want to ask a little question around. So your laugh even then is delayed because I see it. With everything going on, so there's so much that we've talked about, you know, you're presenting and having an up, and you know, there's just so much more we could have gone through. But there's so much you do at the moment. What's your work-life balance like? How do you mention the notifications? So is that kind of the key thing that helps you personally? How do you kind of manage it all? And what do you do, I guess, as well in your spare time? Is it all tech, or is there anything else that you do hobby-wise?
Yeah, so I'm totally damaged, and which means that I need to work hard on this, on the digital well-being, and I really need to practice what I preach in terms of the notifications, being super intentional. There was one thing I wanted to say regarding the notifications, because I think why this is important is because of time is the only commodity that you never get back, right? So you need to use your time wisely. And have you ever noticed if people, you meet someone at a cafe, for instance, and they meet you up, but they're still on their phone and they're not paying any attention and so on. Whilst if you have someone that knows that this meeting, I have planned for it, I have reserved my time for it, and I know this is the most important thing for me right now. So I'm going to put the mobile maybe on the table, but I'm not looking at it. I'm concentrating in this moment right now. And that's something I'm struggling with myself, being in the moment and making sure that I'm enjoying myself in the moment, and at work, at home, and at vacations, and so on. So I need to practice that, and that's why I do the digital well-being stuff. So when I'm not at work, well, I run a company, I'm a Microsoft regional director, I'm an MVP, I'm an author, I'm a public speaker, and so on. So I work probably more than most people, but at the same time, I try to be very intentional with my time to disconnect when I'm disconnecting. So I'm also playing games with my son. We play some online games, and I have like a good gaming computer, so I can enjoy the games that are out there, and spending time doing that helps me recharge as well. And doing it with someone in my family, which is really good. I can do that. That's part of my hobby. The other hobby we have is we work a lot, and then we go on vacation, and we try to go on long vacation. So actually this summer, I think we are going to be away for 6 weeks.
Wow.
We leave the last week of July and come back in the first week of August. And it's partly because of we haven't been able to travel for some time. But it's very important to have those long vacations. So during those 6 weeks, you actually can have a different life even, and create a new identity for yourself. And then come back and say, wow, I'm really out of this job right now. I need to get back in there because you were so incredibly disconnected. And now I'm totally lying, though, because I will be connected all the time. But and being able to work from where I am as well is very important for me, because then that means I can take 1 week longer vacations because I can work one day, for instance. But balancing that out and trying to do something completely different over a longer period, I typically say that 1 week is time off. 2 weeks, that may be a vacation, but it's after 2 weeks, you actually have a vacation. Before that, you're trying to detox from the connectivity and from your work and all that. So we always try to have those long vacations. So I'm looking forward to try that this summer. And we're going to Key West this time, and outside Miami, and then going to spend some time in the water.
Oh, awesome. That sounds mega exciting. I completely agree with what you're saying about that long break. I've never had one that long away from work, but I tend to like to try and take a long Christmas break off. I usually end up with maybe three and a half, sometimes even 4 weeks off over the Christmas period to recharge, because it's one of my favorite times of year. And I think it's so important, and it does do you so much good. And I think slowly but surely, when I'm not working, I am getting a lot better at switching off from work. Not everything. When I'm not working, when I've got time off from my job, I don't think I ever entirely switch off from community. I'm always doing something like this, or but at least I'm putting the job on hold for a period of time, which helps more than you know. You sometimes think when you're about to go back to work, oh, that went quick, but then when you get back into it, it's not until you get back into it that you realize just how rested you are and how much good it has done you. So it is so important.
Absolutely. And so the No Meeting Friday that we started with in Cloudway, that was conceived during vacation, but it was conceived in between week 3 and 4, not in week 1 and 2, because then I was still detoxing. But in week 3 and 4, you're starting like, now I'm rested, I'm like, I have lots of time on my hands. And then I'm starting to think about, how can I optimize my workday? Maybe I'm feeling like, why am I not excited to go back to my work? What's going on there? It's like, why am I not rushing? Why am I not like, why do I actually want to be on this vacation for weeks and weeks and weeks and not go back to my work? What's wrong with my work? And then I started to think about, yeah, maybe we need to like calm down a bit. And maybe we need to lower the tempo, because this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And we need to be more, again, be more conscious about like how we are spending our time, be more intentional about recharging and so on. So that's why we started the No Meeting Fridays, for instance, because I started reading some books about that. I was still disconnected, but I was still thinking about how I could optimize my my time, really.
It's an amazing initiative for sure. And I do know that I'm fortunate enough to know a good few members of your team, Ben and Leslie, amongst others, and they all talk so passionately about it, and I think it's an amazing thing you've done for yourself and those who work with you. So more power to you. So I'm just getting a chat from Kat that her sound is going particularly bad now. So I think what we will do is we could talk to you endlessly, Stoller. It's been an amazing conversation. We must give you some time back to go and enjoy what's left of your evening. I'd love you to come back and talk to us again on the show, because we could talk about so much more, as Kat has been saying. But before we close out, and I thank you for your time, is there anything else you'd like to say to the listeners and viewers, how they can reach you if they want to get in touch? Any closing thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, so when the penny dropped back in February for me and I came up with a digital well-being thing, I decided to record YouTube videos. I've been doing YouTube for many years, but this time I was going to tell all. So I did a couple of live streams, like 4 Fridays in a row, where I did live streams where the intention was to me for talk about the topic until I had nothing more to say. So that ended up with 8 hours of deep dive recordings on digital well-being. So if you're interested in digital well-being, check out my YouTube videos, because if you have the time to watch those videos, and the super trick is to watch them on 1.25% speed, because then you save some time, I will guarantee you will learn something and become a tad more happy in your life.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, I, for one, will be doing that, and we will definitely put that in the show notes so people can go and take a look at that themselves as well. But amazing. Stoller, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for everything that you do in the community, and we will love to talk to you again sometime in the very near future. But for now, we shall close off this show. We'll say thank you to all of our viewers And listeners, please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. You can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/C/CloudConversations. You can find us on Twitter on @CloudCon365. And you can reach out to any of us, the hosts, Kat, Azure, Rue, and myself on Twitter and LinkedIn. We are not hard to find, and we're very friendly. If you want to talk to us about coming on the show, please say hello. We're always looking for people in the community to come and talk to us and spread their knowledge and drop some knowledge, as the saying goes. But fantastic. So, Kat, I don't know if you can still hear us, but if you can, give us a little wave goodbye. And
I can hear.
And oh, you're here.
Yeah, okay.
We shall close this out, and we shall catch you on the next exciting episode of Cloud Conversations very soon. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care now. Bye-bye.